We're about to hear from America's rabbi, America's most famous rabbi, my friend, Rabbi Shmuley. He's got a lot to say today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I've got a thoroughly Jewish list of items I want to talk to you about today. And if all goes well, my friend Rabbi Shmuley should be calling in soon to join the conversation on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining with us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. This is our fourth day now. We started Monday. All right, he'll be calling in a half an hour. Okay, well, that's just great. We will switch some of the discussion waiting for him until 2:30 instead of 2. No problem whatsoever, except for those of you who won't be able to listen to 2:30. It's still not a problem because everything is archived for free on our website. You can subscribe by podcast for free at AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. But this is our fourth day of praying and fasting. Some are fasting completely. Some are fasting different things. But we're all praying. We're gathering as a staff and team and praying. We're praying additionally on our own. And we're asking God for his supernatural provision to back what he has called us to do. We're on the front lines. We have many amazing open doors in front of us. We have the incredible privilege of speaking to you on some of these great stations across America. It all costs money, and we're at that bursting point, and we know one thing everyone can do is pray. So we're asking you to go to God with us, that he would back the vision with his provision. I just got a real neat email sent to me, a private message on Facebook. I'm not able to keep up with lots of them, but I don't want to give details as to what city this gentleman is in now, but we grew up across the street from each other. I was just telling our daughter Megan that's here in the offices with us that when I don't know how old I was, but not old enough to have a car. And here we're in this neighborhood, about 300 families, almost all Jewish. It was called Harbor Isle, right next to Island Park, which is right next to Long Beach. Real, real, real small area. And some called it Hebrew Isle because it was almost all Jewish families, but very few religious Jewish families there. Anyway, grew up in this neighborhood, and across the street from me, one house over, was another family with some sons, and, you know, we knew each other. And one day, friend and I were out in front of the house, and we were self-hitting a hard ball, you know, one guy hitting it, the other guy fielding it. And one of the neighbors, one of the brothers that lived across the street, his car was there in the street. He came out and said, no, I don't like the way this feels. And we were stupid. We're playing self-hitting a hardball. We're like, no, we're controlling it. Anyway, next shot, boom, took out the side view mirror. I mean, a perfectly placed shot and destroyed his side view mirror. Our neighbors across the street, how stupid could we be? Anyway, got a note from him that he's in a particular city, and he said this. He said, I've been working with a Jewish organization in this particular city. He said, I work with quite a few rabbis and mashgiachs. These are folks that inspect kosher food and things like that. He said, one of the younger rabbis is speaking about a book he's reading, and he hands it to me, 10 Amazing Jews. Well, I almost fell out of my chair. The first page I opened to is your story. We grew up in a tiny, tiny little area and, you know, just a few hundred families. And here he is in another city years later, and he gets a book that a rabbi is reading, 10 Amazing Jews with testimonies and stories. And there it's mine. It's an excellent story. Great to see you're doing so well. Good to see another person for Harbor Isle making, excelling in life. Anyway, how sweet to hear that and how neat to know that we get to share our story with a whole lot of friends around America. Okay, some controversies when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Any Jewish-related question you have, Hebrew-related question, Jewish tradition, Jewish background to New Testament, Messianic prophecy, objection to Jesus, Yeshua. Today's a great day to call, 866-348-7884. And if you're listening, and you're listening secretly because your community, your friends, your family wouldn't be happy that you're listening, the best thing is you're listening in the sight of God. God knows. And if you express your heart to Him and say, God, I just want You, and I just want to please You, and I just want to honor You, or maybe you don't even know if He's there. You're going through deep, deep questions. God, if You're really there, would You cause me to know it? Show me how to please You. He'll answer that prayer. Then how will you respond? All right. We often deal with controversies on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And Jews are like everybody else. We have our strengths. We have our weaknesses. We have maybe been tested more than other people. We may have had to fight our way through things more than other people. It is a vice and a virtue that we've been stiff-necked. In other words, we have often been stubborn in God's sight, as the scriptures call us stiff-necked. On the other hand, it has been a tenacity and a toughness that has helped us get through over the centuries. But we're like everybody else. We have fine people among us, and we have lousy people among us. However, there are rumors that always associate with Jews, as if we are here to take over the entire world, as if there is a secret plot, as if we run the Vatican, or on and on and on. And you always hear these bizarre stories, and you think, no one could take them seriously. But then you find out people actually take them seriously. And then in years past, in centuries past, it's led to bloodshed. And bloodshed against Jews, because the stories are taken seriously. And when you have a situation in the Middle East as volatile and difficult as it is, and so many millions of people involved in a difficult situation, when you come to it with a wrong theology or you come to it with certain presuppositions, it's very easy to demonize Israel. And I challenge those who get so upset with alleged Israeli violations of justice, I challenge them to take those stands in Gaza in the midst of Hamas. I challenge them to show that same compassion in Syria, where more than 100,000 people have lost their lives. Oh, and by the way, are you aware of the secret Israeli hospital in the Golan Heights treating refugees crossing over from Syria, men, women, and children being taken in by Israeli soldiers with makeshift hospitals set up there, one in particular makeshift hospital, a tent hospital, and if the people need more serious care, they bring them to other hospitals in Israel? Why? Because Israel does that. Israel does that. Yet the extraordinary double standard is not a surprise, because Israel gets demonized, or Israel is expected to operate on a different standard. Do you think that it is a coincidence that the Israeli Arabs, who number about 1.5 million, that they do not want to be under the governmental control of the Palestinian Authority or Hamas? That they would much rather be under Israeli governmental control, and yet Israel is allegedly the monster of the Middle East? So you hear these stories from time to time. This one is a couple years old, but this was actually taken seriously. It was taken seriously. It goes back to 2012. Oh, an Israeli spy that you never would have expected. Clip number 7, Joey.
Turkish authorities believe that they have found a bird used for espionage purposes by Israel. An investigation to that effect was launched in Ankara several days ago after a farmer discovered a dead Merops apiaster, commonly known as the European bee eater, in his field. The bird had a ring reading Israel on one of its legs. The bird beak in question reportedly sported unusually large nostrils, which combined with the identification ring raised suspicions that the bird was implanted with a surveillance device and that it arrived in Turkey as part of an espionage mission.
Under torture, the bird confessed, no, I'm just kidding. Listen, people believe that. Okay, check this out. I'm not making this up. What I'm about to tell you, I am not making this up. Are you ready? Facebook. We have written about and exposed their glaring double standards in the past. I'm glad to use Facebook as a vehicle for the gospel and to help people and minister to people and to help build community in a positive way. It can be used with great strength. It can be used with great weakness. It all depends on what someone brings into it and how it's used. So I appreciate the good it can do, and I will speak out against the wrong. We've exposed double standards, for example, when there was an attempt to shut down my page with my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, because some people complained about it, and I did receive apologies for it, and was set up in such a way that that wouldn't happen again. But we sent to Facebook, and I wrote about it in some well-circulated articles, site after site after site, with the most horrific anti-Jesus material you can imagine, with the most horrific anti-Israel material. Even anti-Israel material that was inciting violence and speaking well of those who wanted to kill Jews, and Facebook allowed those to stand. Well, there's a new Facebook page called Jewish Ritual Murder. Facebook just celebrated 10 years of existence. It's called Jewish Ritual Murder, and it links you to literature on this. This is one of the most horrific, ugly, dangerous, destructive libels that has ever been brought against Jewish people in history. The myth began several hundred years back, a little bit longer than that, that Jews would capture, say, a Christian child at the time of Passover, and they would torture the child, or it could be, say, a Catholic priest. They would torture the person and then drain the blood. And they would use the blood for the cooking of Passover matzah. This is still believed in parts of the Muslim world today. I spoke with someone from Eastern Europe who just said where they grew up, it was believed with their parents' families. They believed that this was a nominal Christian community. And they were afraid to ever eat Passover matzah if they had an invitation to, because they thought it had Christian blood in it. These things are still widely believed in parts of the Muslim world. They have been serialized and put on TV. They're cartoons, illustrations, and on and on and on. Well, here's a Facebook page called Jewish Ritual Murder. I wrote about Jewish ritual murder in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, and spoke about the lie of this and how many, many Jews were put to death, tortured, burned at the stake for their alleged participation in these alleged crimes. The whole thing is a myth, an ugly myth. So there's a page on Facebook now espousing the myth of Jewish ritual murder. And Facebook, as of last night when I checked, has not taken it down and finds that it does not violate their standards. Are you kidding me? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Linda in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon. I would like to hear a comprehensive explanation of what it means that since Yeshua's death, we are no longer under the law. I know that Yeshua comes to end the law, but end means fulfill it, not terminate it, because he mm-hmm. not come to abolish it. But is there any way to clarify what not being under the law means and to disseminate this information so that my Christian friends will not try to save the Jews from being enslaved to legalism, which is a misapplication of the word?
Right, certainly. Okay, well, the first thing is, as far as Jewish people in Yeshua, I'm a Jew who's a follower of Jesus Yeshua. And he's the one that the law, the prophets are pointing to. But let me give you the clear answer. And if you get my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, I deal with it there as well. Paul uses the phrase most particularly in Romans 6 that we're not under the law, we're under grace. It primarily means three things. We are not under the law. Number one is a system of justification. We are not seeking to obey certain commandments and by obeying those commandments to become acceptable in God's sight. So that's number one. We are not under the law as a system of justification. Number two, we are not under the condemnation of the law. In other words, if we don't observe the Sabbath, there's not a death penalty hanging over us. So number one, we're not under the law as a system of justification. Number two, we're not under the condemnation of the law. And number three, we are not under the law as a schoolmaster, as a tutor to bring us to the Messiah. The law, in that sense, has done its job by convicting us of sin and showing us righteousness and pointing to the Messiah. So we're not under the law as a system of justification. We're not under the law as condemnation. We're not under the law as a schoolmaster or tutor to bring us to the Messiah. That's what it means. But we're free to observe it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have to tell you, my friend, I've been, quote, attacked before by people using real bullets, not words. And I am not going to be intimidated. I am not going to stand down with respect to President Obama's commitment to try to find peace in the Middle East.
The voice of John Kerry, and he's in the midst of controversy in terms of his involvement. He's been back and forth to Israel many times in the last year, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. Now, in point of fact, there have been a number of Facebook sites deemed anti-Semitic that have been removed, and hopefully this Jewish ritual murder one will be another. We're talking about something that can incite violence and hatred, as opposed to having respectful differences of opinion or even strong differences of opinion. The Hungary anti-Semitic page has been pulled by Facebook. This was a year ago or 6 months ago or so. This took place. You know what? Let me play a couple of quotes for you from David Duke. Let me grab these. And Joey, go to clip number 16. David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, he's warning people. This is Press TV, January 12th, so just 3 weeks ago. He wants people to know about the evil. Jews. Start with clip 16.
Zionism is not simply like the Jewish state in Israel, Netanyahu and a few of these other radicals in Israel, fomenting these policies and a few other Jewish groups around the world supporting them. This is a worldwide, Zionism is a worldwide phenomenon. It is a globalist phenomenon. They dominate the international banks with enormous financial power. They dominate the world's media. And they dominate the political structure.
The evil Jews. There you have it. Yep. In fact, if you want to look into this, go to Elder of Zion, Z-I-Y-O-N, the way it's spelled, elderofzion.blogspot.com. David Duke continues, clip 17.
The real rogue state, the nuclear rogue state, the state that has nuclear weapons right now, the state that has United Nations resolutions for them to get out of the West Bank, for instance, which they've been violating for decades, that's the state that should be sanctioned, sure. Not Iran.
So Israel is the rogue nuclear state, not Iran. The ones you need to fear are the Israelis. Maybe I'll save one clip for Shmuley to react to, so we'll wait on that. Hey, look, I want to lay this out. I know folks from many different perspectives listen to this show, so I want to lay this out plainly. You can say, I don't believe the modern state of Israel is fulfillment of prophecy and not be an anti-Semite. I understand that. You can say, I believe Israel's fulfillment of prophecy today, but I believe that the Israelis are guilty of injustice injustices and sinful acts against the Palestinians, and that does not make you an anti-Semite. You can say, I don't believe there are any special promises that remain for the Jewish people, and I have issues with Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, and that does not make you an anti-Semite. I simply want to point out that because of the spirit of the age, because of the fact that there is a real devil who wants to destroy the Jewish people, because of the propensity of professing Christians to become anti-Semites, I just want to say plainly that if your theology is wrong or your views of the Middle East are wrong, then it does not take much to begin to espouse anti-Semitic lies. So here, I posted a picture on Facebook, and it was called Chicago-Style Negotiations, Dry Bones, a famous Israeli cartoon. And it's got John Kerry looking like the Godfather. I ain't threatening you guys with boycotts and stuff. I'm just saying that these things can happen. And without our protection, you Israelis could get hurt real bad. So I see somebody, don't know who the guy is, posts this on my private Facebook page, my personal. He posts and says, finally, drop these Zionist criminals. I thought, well, he can't be serious. So I posted, I said, you're joking, correct? He said, not at all. And he continues to explain how he's not being anti-Semitic at all, that this is a matter of Jews killing Palestinians, and that they are Zionist criminals, and what's the root of his views, his theology, that God's finished with Israel, that God has replaced Israel? He said, no justice in bringing unbelieving Jews back in a land that God kicked them out of. And he goes on to explain, he refers to my blindness and mocks me. He said, I was there, but God set me free. Then challenges me to see if I'm even saved, says I'm religious, but are you saved? He says, I think you may be saved, but your theology is like a religious Pharisaical colony. I used to believe what you did, but God, God's sovereign grace brought me out of it. This is what the guy says, and it goes on, and we finally had to block him. Zionist criminals, and it comes from a wrong theology. Comes from a wrong theology, and then with that wrong theology, a skewed view of justice in the Middle East, and quickly it becomes a matter of Zionist criminals. Eye-opening, isn't it? Eye-opening. Hey, I happened to spot on Amazon.com that they have reduced the price of Hyper Grace yet again. If you want to get the ebook, they now have it at 56% off, a $16 book for $7. So if you've been waiting to download it, I don't think it's going to get any lower than this. So I really encourage you to go for it today. Go to Amazon.com right now. Again, I don't know if it'll last another hour or day or week. No idea. Go to Amazon.com and click on Hyper Grace with my name. Someone wrote a book using the same name, trying to refute my book. It's a little book the guy wrote, and I've reached out to him, said, unfortunately, he never even read my book. So I sent him a copy of it so he'd actually see what he wrote wasn't even accurate in terms of overall what I was teaching and laying out. So put in my name, Hyper Grace, and you can download it really inexpensively. And thank you, all those who are standing with us, praying with us. Thank you. We are stretched out, believing God, asking him to do the impossible and to back us as he's called us to do this work. Everyone giving this week a gift of $50 or more, we're signing and sending a copy of my Jeremiah commentary. Those of you who love to study, love to get in the Hebrew, love to really dig in the Word, you'll love this. The commentary is 550 pages, but it comes with a commentary on Lamentations and Ezekiel by top Old Testament scholars. So beautiful 928-page hardcover volume. I'll sign it for your gift of $50 or more to help us do the very things we're doing today. Call right now. Would you stand with us? 1-800-278-9978. And it's a great day to become a torchbearer, monthly supporter. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we are expecting to hear from our friend Rabbi Shmuley. He was supposed to call in at 2 and had to put it off till 2:30, which is right now Eastern Standard Time. So we'll see if he's able to get through. 866-34-TRUTH. I do want to get to the story about SodaStream and Scarlett Johansson and the calls for boycott and the Super Bowl interview and all of that, the controversy swirling around that. I do want to talk about Secretary of State John Kerry and Israel and peace process issues. We will discuss those as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Let's go to Lindenhurst. I really want to get that call because the caller was suggesting from what I saw on my screen that the reason that Facebook allows anti-Semitic, Jew-hating, even violence-inciting against the Jews pages is because Mark Zuckerberg is German. I was curious to hear that because he's Jewish. He's a German Jew. I don't know, but he's Jewish. So I was curious to get that call, but I guess Paul couldn't stay on the line with us. Let's go to our buddy Carlton. And Carlton from Staten Island had an interesting question. I tell you what, that just gives me a bit more time. I want to get to those two calls. Listen, if you have a Jewish-related question, of any kind, give me a call. 866-34-TRUTH. If it's a Hebrew-related question, if you want to challenge me on something you don't agree with, if you're a Jewish listener and you have issues with Jesus, Yeshua being the Messiah, if it has to do with the modern state of Israel, by all means, give me a call. But can I lay something out plainly? Can I lay this out plainly for those who still struggle with the idea of the Jewish people being brought back to the land in unbelief, who say the origins of modern Zionism go to atheism and communism or Marxism, and were opposed by most of the religious Jews, and then even the religious Jews in Israel today, they are hostile to the gospel, extremely hostile to Jews believing in Jesus, and Israel has, you know, high abortion rates and high prostitution rates, and Tel Aviv is a party city and overwhelmingly voted the most gay-friendly city in the world. And you know, how can Christians support Israel? It is not because of Israel's goodness or obedience. Although, in terms of the Middle Eastern nations, Israel does shine in many, many ways in terms of humanitarian acts and efforts to do good and do right. There's no question about that. But just as when God called Israel in the first place and said to Moses, Deuteronomy 7, it's not because you're better than anybody. It's not because you're special. It's because I love the fathers. I loved Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I made promises. It's the same today. It's by grace, not by works. You see, yeah, but God made a covenant. And in the covenant, he said, if you sin, I'll exile you from the land. And if you repent, I'll bring you back to the land. That's true. People say, well, the Jews have not repented. Why should they be back in the land? Because of mercy. Because of passages like Ezekiel 36, just like the return from the Babylonian exile, where God did it for his reputation, not because of our goodness. I find it so hypocritical and even hard to understand how Christians could say we stand by grace and we're forgiven by grace and it's because of God's love for us, not because of our accomplishments. And then turn around and say, well, God can't act in a gracious way towards Jews. Why does the church stand by grace, but Jews can't stand by grace? All right, we come back. My friend Rabbi Shmuley will talk about Scarlett Johansson. We'll talk about SodaStream. We'll talk about illegal settlements. We'll talk about the work of John Kerry in Israel with my guest, America's Rabbi, Rabbi Shmuley Tetz, as we come back.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast on The Line of Fire. There's no one I'd rather have on the air with me than my dear friend, known as America's Rabbi, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, to talk about some key issues. Hey, Shmuley, great to talk to you today.
Mike, how are you? I sound like there's sandpaper in my lungs, but I've been unwell. But amidst that, I couldn't say no to your invitation, rare as it is. Since I knew I wouldn't be invited on until the second coming of Christ, I thought that I may as well avail myself of the opportunity.
Well, you know, we're praying that you'll be ready for the second coming, Shmuley. But I'm just getting over bronchitis myself. I'm sympathetic to that, but don't worry about the sandpaper. You sound fine, and whatever you if you keel over at a certain point, I'll just keep saying what you were saying. Your family doing well, Shmuley?
Yeah, thank God they're all well. If I keel over, you'll know when I took one for the team. Just keep on moseying on.
We will absolutely do that, Shmuley. You know, the only other thing I have to do in life to stay busier is accept all the invitations with all your kids. It's one time to get to the bar mitzvah here, and then the circumcision here, and then the wedding here. Next thing is going to be the grandkids' bris, but I'll get to one of these. I got to one wedding so far, and I'll get to the others. But Shmuley, before we get into the Scarlett Johansson situation, and it was your editorial in the Allgemeiner that got me to contact you last night, what's happened on college campuses with Jewish or Israeli speakers? I mean, people of note, ambassadors, people like Natan Sharansky. What's happened on some of our American campuses?
Well, I'm glad you're asking me that because it allows me to offer a bit of a recounting of something I experienced last week. I was in Warsaw last week searching for the remnants of the Warsaw Ghetto. It was right after I visited Auschwitz with the Israeli Knesset. They had gone there for the first time last Monday, a week ago Monday. I was in knee-deep snow. I was chilled to the bone. I don't know how any Holocaust survivor survived even the cold, let alone the typhoid and, of course, poison gas. But, Mike, the heroes of the Warsaw Ghetto who rose up in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising of April to May 1943, all of whom died, and most of them died at their own hand. They died in a bunker at Mila 18. They finally accepted that the propaganda machine of the Nazis, which told them that deportation to the East meant a better life for their children, a better life for their families, was a lie. They knew they were going to die. In other words, here's the point I'm making. They finally understood that resistance was the only path, that the only thing they could do was fight. Now, let's not in any way compare that to the situation on campuses, God forbid.
Right.
The United States is an incredible democracy. God forbid we're not what Hitler was, that monster. But I simply want to extract the thought itself. You know, sometimes you need to accept that you have a fight on your hands. The people who oppose Israel on campus, the BDS movement, the Israel Apartheid Week, they're not there to negotiate about whether Israel is a righteous democracy, whether Israel is a just country. They are there to delegitimize Israel, to destroy its reputation. If Israel's reputation is destroyed, it therefore cannot defend itself. And no matter what army it has, it cannot defend itself. That's its sole purpose, to delegitimize Israel. And I think that the Jewish community has been late in accepting that there is a fight on our hands. You know, the Jewish student groups like Hillel and others have wanted there to be harmony on campus. So they don't want to debate BDS. They don't want to debate the Israel Apartheid Week. They want to, like, do Yom HaTzmaut parties, Israel Independence Day parties. They want to do falafel parties. They want to let's have dialogues. I no longer accept that is the case on America's most troublesome campuses. On campuses like Columbia and UC Irvine and UC Berkeley and even Rutgers, there is a battle, and we have to embrace the battle. So what we're doing as an organization is staging world-class, rules-based debates, inviting three of the top speakers from each side. So let the people who hate Israel, as long as they're not militants and advocating violence, let them come. We will choose a neutral venue. On America's leading campuses, we will invite 1,000 students, and we will get Israel's best speakers, Brett Stevens from the Wall Street Journal, Professor Alan Dershowitz from Harvard, Dennis Prager, even, you know, me, God willing, I'm going to participate in some of them, and we're going to accept that there's a battle. But the short answer to your question, Mike, of what happened, why did we lose the campuses, is because we didn't fight back.
So you write in your article, Trying to secure pro-Israel speakers on campuses like UC Irvine or McGill can result in the kind of dangerous riots and chaos that prevented former Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren, Natan Sharansky, and Benjamin Netanyahu from even being heard. Such hooliganism has been common in Britain for years, where, for example, Deputy Ambassador to Britain, Alon Rosnier, was prevented from speaking at the University of Essex. Foreign Minister Danny Al-Yalom was shouted down at Oxford by shouts by Ichbach al-Yahud, slaughter the Jews, and from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And at Edinburgh, where Ambassador Daniel Taub, despite being protected by a small army of British police and Israeli agents, still had his lecture disrupted. Wasn't there a Netanyahu lecture that was canceled in the States because of student uprising?
Yeah, I think that was at McGill in Canada, but this is happening all over the country. You know, you're well aware of the fact that I was a rabbi at Oxford University from 1988 to 1999, Mike. And the reason we were successful in protecting Israel's reputation on campus when the whole when the entire delegitimization campaign began is because I accepted from day one I had a battle. Now, I was lucky because Oxford has a very robust debate tradition. Organizations like the Oxford Union are all about debate. So our events lent themselves to debate. We brought six Israeli prime ministers to respond to and debate their opponents. We had Benjamin Netanyahu twice. We had Shamir. We had Peres. I got to take me through the whole list of the prime ministers, Ehud Olmert, et cetera, let alone countless Israeli ministers. We accepted that we had a battle and that our job was to fight back, to show that Israel could win arguments in the marketplace of ideas. But you should see the reaction that we've received in my announcement in that column that we are starting these rules-based debates on campus throughout the United States. Organizations like Hillel, which are outstanding organizations, but I feel in this case they're just wrong. They have mounted a full court press to persuade some of our speakers to even drop out. They don't want these debates on campus because they think it's going to lead to disharmony. They think it's going to legitimize the BDS movement, the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement.
Sanctions, yep.
But Mike, legitimize them? A lot of these people own the campus. They already rule the campus. I mean, how much worse can it get at a campus like Columbia University, which has 5,000 Jewish students, and that hosted Mahmoud Ahmadinejad? I mean, that's an astonishing spectacle when you think about it. That here you have one of America's elite universities, where Alexander Hamilton himself attended, at the time it was called King's College, and you have a Hitler wannabe, Ahmadinejad, who denies the Holocaust, gets up in front of every rostrum and says that he's going to exterminate Israel, wipe Israel off the map, which of necessity, of course, necessitates the murder of 6 million Jews, another 6 million Jews. And he's invited in New York City to the premier Ivy League university that has 5,000 Jewish students, where he famously said there aren't even homosexuals anywhere in Iran. Even
right.
The gay community did not object to his appearance or didn't sufficiently object. So the hypocrisy and the double standards are astonishing. So what I'm saying is we have to accept that we have a battle on campus and we have to fight back.
And again, when you're saying fight back, it means in the battle of the ideas. Look, that's
absolutely
one of the reasons that you've debated
absolutely
me on the Jesus issue over the years. You've said, look, the moment we leave the battle place of ideas or we give the impression that we can't win there, we're already defeated. So I appreciate your tenacity and courage in standing there over the years. Let's just do this. We'll take 2 minutes and then we'll come back
quick. Can I just say very quick
go ahead
to that, 10 seconds?
Yeah.
I get stopped all over the world with people saying to me that they've seen our debates on YouTube, you and me. I'm serious, and people love them. And it doesn't make a difference if they think that you won or I won. 99.99% think that I won, of course, Mike, but that's not the point. The point is that
you met that person? You met that person that had that opinion? But go ahead.
No, you go to your break.
No, that's all right. I've got a little time, but when
people
you hear the word...
People love our debates, and what it did was is it created... illumination between two communities. You know, it's funny. Wherever I go, I'm often introduced as the rabbi who has a relationship with the Messianic Jewish community, meaning I consider every Jew born to a Jewish mother a Jew. I don't care what they believe in. And I've enjoyed our debates tremendously. And you and I have a universe to disagree on, but we love each other. There's a deep friendship between us. And my love for you comes for, even though I will stop you from... some of your efforts in missionizing Jews, which I think are utterly misguided, and they're wrong. But that doesn't change the fact that I have seen your gentlemanly qualities demonstrated on way too many occasions for me to ever think anything but something loving about you. And so debate, even though the issues are not always resolved, friendships can ensue. But let's face it, Mike, the anti-Israel groups on campus... The majority of them, unfortunately, they really hate Israel, and it's an irrational hatred.
And
it's easy to demonstrate that because they're not condemning North Korea, which is a Stalinist concentration camp, and they're not condemning the abuses of Putin in Russia, and they're not condemning the abuses of the Communist Party in China, and they're not condemning the limitless abuses of the Arab world in places like Saudi Arabia. They're just condemning Israel. So, by the definition of singling out Jews for criticism—that's the definition of anti-Semitism.
Right, and that's the thing, Shmuley, that I see that when Christians themselves, who tend to be the greatest friends of Israel, have an adjustment in their theology and they don't see chosenness or calling or purpose anymore on the Jewish people or significance in the modern state of Israel, all too often become irrational as well. All right, we got a couple more minutes with Rabbi Shmuley before he keels over. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are the people, and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
So I've got to say to Scarlett Johansson, whom I once admired, I've got to say to her that you are an absolute disgrace. Your face should be scarlet now. Scarlet with embarrassment. Your hands are certainly scarlet. They are scarlet with the blood of the Palestinian people whose land has been stolen so that these illegal settlements can produce products.
All right. Well, crazy words, you say. Crazy words. They're spoken by British MP George Galloway. Shmuley, I don't want your blood to boil when you're not feeling well, but talk to me about this. Talk to me about
this George Galloway?
Yes, Scarlett. Yeah.
Well,
George
Galloway is a Saddam Hussein lover, Saddam Hussein defender. This is the kind of man who, in his friendships, can aid and abet genocide if he's not careful. It's actually sad to see a member of a civilized nation like Britain really go over so deeply to the dark side. He's one of Israel's great Israel haters. He refused to, at the Oxford Union, he refused to debate someone just because they were from Israel. He's anti-Semitic to his core. You know, these people love to dress up their, the statement of his own character can easily be assessed by saying that he loves Saddam Hussein and he hates Israelis.
Right.
But we don't mean Israelis, we mean Jews. Let's not make the mistake of believing for a moment that any of these people who say they hate Israel but they like Jews mean what they say. They mean they hate Jews and they have to somehow find some kind of respectable cloth within which to cover their deeply felt anti-Semitism. And it was Martin Luther King himself who said that. He said, when people say they say they hate Israel, you're talking anti-Semitism. George Galloway is a repugnant, repulsive human being. We're going to have to pour holy water on your radio show just to cleanse it of the mention of his name on your airwaves.
Yeah, well, in fact, we have something better than holy water. It's the blood of Jesus, the Messiah. So we will take care of that part. But illuminate us. Take just 2 minutes. And tell us, Scarlett Johansson, many do not know, is Jewish, famous actress. She appeared in a Super Bowl commercial for SodaStream, which is an Israeli company located in what is referred to as the West Bank. Some call it the occupied territories. They say it's built on an illegal settlement. Actually has hundreds of Palestinians working there. It has a mosque and a synagogue. The folks have their meals together, and the Palestinians are making far more money there than other places. Oxfam, an organization that Scarlett Johansson was part of, wanted her to break her association with SodaStream because it's alleged illegal settlements. Just give us your two-minute sagacious commentary on the realities of the situation, Shmuley.
You know, there's so many Hollywood celebrities who are virulently anti-Israel that it's kind of sad. I mean, look at Elvis Costello, who refuses to play in Israel. Stevie Wonder refused to play at a benefit for Israel. Emma Thompson, unbelievable. Emma Thompson condemned Israel. And out of the blue, you get to Scarlett Johansson, who we all thought was just an amazing actress and a beautiful woman. We didn't realize that she was made of steel, that she has rock-solid convictions. What a courageous, incredible woman. she alone, thus far, as a Hollywood personality, has stood up to the BDS movement, to the anti-Israel boycott movement. And everyone thought she would buckle because she was subject to international opprobrium for becoming SodaStream's spokesperson. But she refused to buckle, and she refused to Oxfam. She resigned. Oxfam has been bashing Israel unfairly since its inception. They're disgusting on Israel. Everybody knows that. So she resigned. Good on her. The truth of SodaStream is that it's in Maale Adumim, which is a city. It's not a settlement. It's not a town. It's exactly 15 minutes from Israel. It employs about 1,300 employees, and 900 are Arabs and Palestinians. They have a Muslim place of worship. They are paid the same amount of money as Israeli workers. When David Birnbaum, the CEO, was invited to meet President Shimon Peres, he brought with him some of the Palestinian workers as representatives. He treats them with the utmost respect. They love SodaStream. The Palestinian workers have been giving interviews to the media saying, why are you trying to destroy our jobs? They are paid double what most people are paid in the West Bank. So this is nothing but another attempt to delegitimize Israel, destroy its industry, notwithstanding how much it punishes the Palestinians. Let's be absolutely clear. The Israel haters don't give one damn about the Palestinians. They don't give one damn about Arab life. It's very easy to prove. Where's their voice on Syria? John Kerry goes to Israel every Monday and Thursday to create peace because of this crisis he says is coming between the Palestinians and Israelis. But I was just there for my son's bar mitzvah, Mike, 2 weeks ago. I saw no stones thrown, thank God. I saw no social unrest. And yet, 40 miles to the north, 130,000 people have been brutally slaughtered by Hafez al-Assad, the butcher of Damascus. So how many times has John Kerry gone there to stop the slaughter? How many times has John Kerry sat with Assad and said, you're going to be tried as an international war criminal? How many times has John Kerry gone to The Hague, to the international tribunal, and said that Assad should be indicted for genocide, gassing children, crimes against humanity? This is not about saving Arab life, because Israel's not taking Arab life. But Assad, who is the single biggest killer alive today, with a single exception of Kim Jong-un, the even bigger murderer of North Korea, they get off scot-free. It's absolutely disgusting. Let us never forget the Obama administration that promised some sort of punitive measures against Assad for gassing 500 kids. We all saw the pictures. 500 Arab kids who are God's children got off scot-free under Obama.
Shmuley, thank you for raising your voice, dear friend, and coming out of your sickbed to do it. You have earned a spot back on the show whenever you want. And we're standing together on this one, heart to heart, Shmuley. Thanks so much for joining us.
I wonder if you guys are still praying for me, Mike.
Oh, well, let's renew it right now. Let's get more prayer support for Rabbi Shmuley, for God's purposes.
I'm never going to accept Jesus as my personal redeemer. I think you don't pray for me at all. I mean, is there like any?
Number one, we keep praying for God's very best for your life. That's number one, and for your family. And number two, hey, you never know what's coming. Hey, listen, website. No, where can people go?
I know, but anyway. Oh yeah, Twitter at Rabbi Shmuley, RABBISHMULEY, and then website, www.shmuley.com. And Mike, you and I have not had a debate in a long time. You got to stop being afraid, man. You got to stop being afraid.
All right. Well, you intimidate me. Your size intimidates me always. All right. I got to run.
And my beard. Okay. Take care.
All right. God bless you. Love you, man.
God bless you too. Love you too, Mike.
All right. My friend, Rabbi Shmuley. All right. We got to set some debates up. Thanks, man, for coming on and joining us. All right. Friends, stand with us. We really need your help to do what we're doing. It's that simple, to the point that we're in the midst of 3 weeks of exceptional prayer, going after God, fasting, seeking His face for breakthroughs. Your gift of $50 or more, I want to send you a signed copy of my Jeremiah commentary, along with commentary on Lamentations and Ezekiel, 928-page hardcover, beautiful volume. Your gift of $50 or more, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. 9978. One more time. 1-800-278-9978. Thanks for standing with us. My bottom line today, sort it out for yourself. What is God's heart towards Israel today? Then side with Him, whatever that is. Well, we keep hearing about the Mideast peace process. Boy, do things get misrepresented, misunderstood, and the lies about Israel continue. We'll sort it out on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome, welcome. It is a delight to be with you today. If you've got Jewish-related questions, Israel-related questions, controversies about Jewish background to New Testament, Hebrew questions, Jewish tradition questions, we'll do our best to answer today. I want to take you through a number of current controversies that are before us in the news, in the world, 866-34-TRUTH. If you missed it, my friend Rabbi Shmuley, a live wire, as always, even in the midst of being sick, joined us the last half hour. You can catch that by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Just later today, you will be able to listen to the broadcast. You know, I'm really indebted to Shmuley in certain ways, because my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, wouldn't exist without his book, Kosher Jesus. I mean that. I had no thought of writing it. Yeah, I thought of different books, Jewish-related books, but remember, I've written Our Hands Are Stained with Blood on Anti-Semitism in Church History and God's Ongoing Purposes for Israel. That came out in 92, has been continuously in print ever since. Then the five-volume series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus, which is pretty much says what I feel needs to be said in on those subjects, over 1,500 pages. And then the book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, another few hundred pages. That's a couple thousand pages of writing there on these subjects. And I thought maybe of certainly planned to do stuff about Israel today and justice issues and prophecy issues and things like that. But I was not planning on this Real Kosher Jesus book. And then Shmuley's Kosher Jesus book came out. If you don't know the story, he had sent it to me months in advance asking for an endorsement. He ended up getting endorsements from everyone from Alan Dershowitz to Glenn Beck to Pat Boone, wide-ranging endorsements. He wanted me to endorse it, and I thought, well, I don't agree with what he wrote. How can I endorse it? And then he quotes me about five times in the book and kind of bashes my position as he quotes me. And but then he has some very friendly, nice things to say in the dedications in the back. I'm one of the people he mentions and dedicates the book to, or acknowledges, I should say. And I finally thought, okay, here's how I can endorse it. He really liked my endorsement. And the book's about to come out. This is a couple of years back. The book's about to come out in Israel, being released in Israel first, and Geffen Publishing, and then going from there to the States. And suddenly there's controversy. Everyone seems to be talking about this book and writing about the book in the Jewish world. And I feel God stir me late in prayer that I need to write something, and woke up the next morning and knew I need to write my own book. And from the day I started writing it to the day it was published on my desk was less than 10 weeks, a modern publishing miracle. I wrote it in three. We're not offering it today, by the way. I mean, you can get it anytime or go online to your bookstore, get it. But without Rabbi Shmuley's Kosher Jesus, there would not have been the Real Kosher Jesus. And that is the number one book I've written in terms of the perfect book to get into the hands of a Jewish person who wants to find out more about Jesus, Yeshua, who he really is, or the perfect book to get into the hands of a Christian who wants to know more about the Jewish background to Jesus. And Shmuley, in turn, in his acknowledgments, says that it's the debates that help sharpen a lot of his position and develop his position in what he wrote. Anyway, I want to talk about Israel today. I want to talk about some of the current attack on the nation and people of Israel, and I want to take your calls as well. 866-34-TRUTH on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and we'll be right back.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
SodaStream's factory in the occupied West Bank is at the center of the dispute. It's located in an Israeli settlement, but staffed mainly by Palestinians with few other job opportunities.
We will not allow the sacrifice of our people, particularly the Palestinians, the 500 Palestinians that work at Mishor Adumim. We will not sacrifice them for some political cause of some activist group. These people depend on us for their livelihood.
Don't blame it on me.
All right, so here's the question on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That was the voice of Daniel Birnbaum after a BBC reporter. He's the chief executive of SodaStream. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, here's the issue. The West Bank is so-called occupied territory. This would be the perspective of Palestinians and most of the rest of the world. And something that's considered to be one of the most inflammatory things for Jews to do is have settlements there. More and more settlements dotting the different territories. So, of course, Jews have left Gaza entirely, and as a reward for that, as a payback for that, they've gotten showered with thousands and thousands and thousands of missiles and an outpouring of continual hatred from Hamas. That was the reward Israel got for forcefully displacing the several hundred thousand Jews who lived there and who had developed the area for many, many years. But so-called illegal settlements, it can be in part of a Palestinian Jerusalem. It could be in, as I say, the so-called West Bank or so-called occupied territories. Israelis would not normally think of it as the West Bank, just in terms of their larger community of life through the centuries or in ancient biblical days. But be that as it may, the question of the settlements, let's just remember this, okay? Let's just remember this, that there are 1.5 million Arabs living in Israel. They live peacefully. They can practice whatever religious faith they practice. They grew from about 200,000 in 1947, 1948 to 1.5 million today. Simple facts. They can have about 10% of the parliament. They could even have 20% if they all voted just in block form for Israeli Arab candidates. But they have 10% of the parliament. They have a seat on the Supreme Court. One of the Supreme Court justices is an Israeli Arab. And when you speak with Israeli Arabs and say, okay, would you like to be under the governmental control of the Palestinian Authority or Hamas? No, no, no. They want to be under the Israeli government. Even though some of them protest against the Israelis in angry terms, they prefer the Israeli government to the Palestinian Authority or to Hamas. Isn't that interesting? What does that tell you? Now, let's go further. If there are to be if there is to be a Palestinian state consisting of Gaza and the West Bank under some joint Palestinian leadership, of course, Palestinian Authority and Hamas can't even agree on that, and their atrocities that they have committed against each other in terms of torture and murder. You don't hear a lot of the Christians who are anti-Zionist Christians speaking out against the horrific treatment of Palestinian Authority towards Hamas and vice versa, which is well known and well documented, hardly a secret. But anyway, why is it that if there's to be a Palestinian state, it must be, to use the German term as I used it last week, Judenrein, Jew-free? Why can't there be Israeli settlements, Jewish settlements? You got 1.5 million Arabs, Palestinians, living in Israel. Why can't Jews live in a Palestinian state? Have you ever thought of that? What does that say? So anyway, there is this company called SodaStream, big enough to have an ad in the Super Bowl. And Scarlett Johansson has been the spokesperson for this famous actress who is also Jewish. And the organization that she worked with said she must break away from this. She must break away from being with SodaStream because SodaStream has its plant built in a, quote, illegal settlement in the West Bank. And the Palestinians working there said, what are you talking about? We're making far more money. Rabbi Shmuley said twice as much. I've seen accounts of four or five times as much as they could make working for someone else. They're there. They're, it's helping their families. They're working side by side with Israeli Jews. They have a mosque. There's a mosque there and a synagogue for those that are religious that want to say their daily prayers. And yet there's this outrage against SodaStream because it's located in the, quote, West Bank illegal settlement. Perhaps this is an example of how Jews living in the so-called occupied territories could be a blessing and a help and an example of coexistence. Why not tout this as something positive? Let's just play a couple more clips from Daniel Birnbaum and then from a Palestinian SodaStream worker. Clip number two.
This is unique in that it's located in the West Bank, in area C of the West Bank, and we're able to employ people of different kinds, the Palestinians side by side with Israeli Arabs and with Israeli Jews. They work together here. We have about 1,300 people working in this facility in harmony and peace, and we're very proud of being able to be here and to contribute in our way to the coexistence and hopefully to the peace in this region.
All right, so he's saying this is a positive thing. We're doing it, and look at the example it's setting, and it's bringing employment, and it's helping families. Why get so worked up over it? And the Palestinians are happy with that as well. And okay, let's get clips three and four ready. This is a worker at the SodaStream plant. This is reported on Jewish News 1. Clip number three.
Palestinian workers at the factory say they get to show their Israeli neighbors who they really are.
We are in contact with the Israeli workers very often. We succeeded in showing them what the Palestinian worker is like, show them what they didn't know, about us. We can tell them a lot about our lives. They had the impression that maybe we were terrorists.
Ah, so the Palestinians just say, look, you know, a lot of the Israelis may think that we all want to kill them or blow them up. We're terrorists, and there are plenty of terrorists among the Israelis, and there are plenty of terrorists among the Palestinians, although not the vast majority of the people. And there are more than enough Israeli Jews who have hatred of the Palestinians. But that's not the norm for the bulk of the population. And one of the biggest issues that I have, one of the biggest concerns I have with the situation there is that the Palestinians are being hurt and have been hurt for decades by their leadership. By the way, per person, more money comes in to the Palestinian, quote, refugees. More money comes in for them than any other people group in the world, per person, per refugee. And yet you say, where is it? Where is it? And what's the unemployment rate in Gaza? And whose fault is that under Hamas? 866-34-TRUTH. So one more word from Daniel Birnbaum, chief executive, SodaStream, number four.
Those campaigns are politically motivated with the goal to demonize Israel. So usually people who air those types of views are misinformed, and we invite them to come and learn what's going on here. This factory is a dream for activists and politicians on both sides of this dilemma, because this factory is the model for peace. SodaStream is showing every day what peace will look like. And proving every day that there can be and will be peace among our peoples.
Ah, and I want to replay this. I played it last hour. Rabbi Shmuley knew who this man was well. This is a parliamentary member, MP George Galloway. Listen to what he has to say about Scarlett Johansson and her being a spokesperson for SodaStream.
So I've got to say to Scarlett Johansson, whom I once admired, I've got to say to her that you are an absolute disgrace. Your face should be scarlet now. Scarlet with embarrassment. Your hands are certainly scarlet. They are scarlet with the blood of the Palestinian people whose land has been stolen so that these illegal settlements can produce products like SodaStream.
Ah, so that these illegal settlements can build factories that employ Palestinians and that have Israeli Jews and Palestinian Muslims working side by side for the betterment of the community. How myopic, how small-minded can someone be? I understand issues are raised about the settlements, but you got to understand there is a whole lot more to the story than you're hearing. Back with your call. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got answers. Excuse me. Let's go to the phones. Barbara in Houston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello, Dr. Brown. I really appreciate your program, your books, and your website. I'm learning a lot.
Well, thank you.
Here's my question. Could you please explain to me how the death penalty in the Torah, because I don't understand why Achan and his family were executed for keeping some loot, but David was and died and committed adultery and murder.
I had a slight hard time hearing the end of that. You don't understand why Achan and his family were killed for keeping part of the loot, but what was the end of the question?
And the King David committed adultery and murder, but he was not executed.
Ah, okay. The short story of the second issue is that he was the king. And kings could do certain things, and God was going to deal with them in different ways. There are some kings that were killed, or queens that were killed. There were cases when that happened. But basically, the king was the king. And I don't mean to say there was a double standard, but the fact is the king was going to be treated differently than your average Israelite. The case with Achan, though, was a severe one. They had just come out of the wilderness. They had suffered for 40 years. And they'd suffered because of disobedience and sin and rebelling against God and unbelief. And now this was the new generation. And they had now come out of the wilderness. And they had now crossed the Jordan miraculously by God's power. And now God was about to begin to fight for them, just like Ananias and Sapphira, where this was right at the beginning, or just like Nadab and Abihu, right at the beginning with dedication of the priesthood. And in this time of purity, and in this time of God backing them in a holy way, you don't play with sin. You don't mess with sacred things, because God was so near in the midst of the people. And because of that, this was a severe violation. And then because of the violation, God did not back his people the next time around, as a result of which 36 Israelites died in the battle against Ai. So Achan's sin was very costly. There are some interpreters that try to say it wasn't his whole family that was killed, only he was killed. The most obvious meaning of the text is that they were all killed, but that, again, corporate responsibility doesn't speak of all of their eternal fates, but rather this severe judgment. And it was a lesson to the entire nation about the severity of the violations. Now, that being said, with David suffered severe consequences. If you will look at the history as it's recorded in the books of Samuel and in First Chronicles, and in those would be the primary places that you'll have it, primarily 2 Samuel after the 11th chapter there, and then First Chronicles, which doesn't mention David's sin with Bathsheba and the killing of Uriah. But you'll see that his kingship is in steady decline after that. You'll see that there's terrible suffering and hardship that comes as a result of that. You will see that his own family ends up divided, that there's now sexual sin and murder even within his own family. So he opens the door, and he does suffer terribly. God's redemption is seen in the fact that his repentance was accepted by God, and we sing the Psalms that he wrote and read his words. His name is mentioned more than 1,000 times in the Bible. So outside of Jesus himself, as for people who walk this earth, David's name is mentioned second to that. But he suffered severe consequences for his sin, even though he didn't suffer the death penalty. And the only reason he didn't suffer the death penalty was because he was the king. And that was the way it was with monarchies in the ancient world.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are very welcome, and it's an important question. You know, here's the takeaway, though. Here's the takeaway. Before I get back to Israel's specific subjects, let me get to the broader one. Nobody gets away with anything in the kingdom of God. Meaning, if we have not repented and turned to the Lord for forgiveness, mercy, even though it may look like sin goes unpunished, if it's not dealt with in this world, it'll get dealt with in the world to come. You know, there's a rabbinic story that talks about a famous rabbi who was considered to be one of the most righteous men of his day, and he dies, and at his funeral there are just a handful of people. And a terribly wicked man known for his notorious sinful acts dies, and there's a large number of people at his funeral. And in the world to come, the rabbi, looking at this, asked the Lord, why is that? I mean, I lived righteously all these years, and almost no one comes to my funeral. That man lived a sinful, decadent life all his years, and he gets large crowds. And in the story, God says to him, you know, there was that one time there was a poor man, and you weren't compassionate towards him. So as punishment for that one sin, there are only a few people at your funeral, but you receive the reward of eternal life, basically. And to the wicked man, there was one righteous deed he did one time when he had compassion. So his reward for that is everyone at the funeral, but he's gonna suffer long term for his wickedness. In other words, things are not always as they appear to be. And ultimately, your sin, my sin, will find us out if we've not turned to the Lord in repentance, made things right as we need to, and got it washed away in the blood of the Messiah. If you're listening and you're under a weight of guilt right now, turn to God, ask him for mercy through what Jesus has done. And if there are things you have to get right, he will help you to do so as a forgiven person in the process. Friends, I noticed last night that the Hyper Grace book has been reduced again as an ebook on Amazon. If you haven't ordered it yet and you want the ebook, get it. It's 56% off. They just keep lowering the price. I don't know how long it'll last. Also, we're in day four of a special season of seeking the face of God. It was late last night, and I said to myself, I've not really had focused, dedicated prayer yet for these things, and had some wonderful time with the Lord before turning in, refreshed in his presence. We're asking you to join with us. We need your help to be on, as you're listening to me right now on the air, we need your help to continue to do this in each station where we are across the country. And we need your help to step through these amazing open doors we have. We can do massive TV expansion onto more channels and some major internet openings, but we need funds just to produce the shows, and we have frugal ways to do it. God knows our salaries, our staff, frugally run, frugally operated. The money that comes in here goes right back out. The first fruits goes to help our missionaries working on the field, but we need your help. So stand with us. Would you do that? Would you stand with us in prayer and go to God to back us in doing what he's called us to do? And if you can help us financially, your gift of $50 or more, a treasure, a book you'll treasure for life, 928 pages, hardcover, signed by me, my Jeremiah commentary, plus commentaries on Lamentations and Ezekiel. Call right now to stand with us, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome. Welcome to our 30 Jewish Thursday broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. You want to hear what some people believe about Israel and the Jewish people? Let me find this last clip. Joey, clip number 18. David Duke, this is just January 12th, 2014, 3 weeks ago. David Duke on Press TV, former Grand Knight, a Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Listen to what he has to say about Israel. Clip number 18.
The Palestinian problem and the Zionist problem goes far beyond the relationship between Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and Lebanon, Israel and Syria, Israel and Iran. It is a worldwide problem. And their control of the media and the control of the political process around the world, they are behind what we call globalism, which is really an effort toward world government, toward a Jewish extremist messianic vision of the world. I mean, it's talking about world domination, and they really do dominate the world in many ways, in media, in international banking, and in politics.
You know what's interesting? What's interesting is when Jews were poor, and many Jews are poor today, many are not, but when Jews were poor, when they were restricted from having the rights that others had in various society and herded together in ghettos, one reason somebody got into banking was the only job that was open to them in some of the society was money lending. And that's how they got into banking. Many Jews got in through that means. What's interesting is the same hatred came against them. When Jews have no power, they're hated because they're going to get power in the future. When Jews have power, they're hated. Aha, you see, they're trying to take over the world. The fact is, your average Jewish businessman in America, wealthy businessman, is not thinking a whole lot about Israel. The whole idea that there's this hidden conspiracy they're trying to take over what and who and what's the conspiracy about? Amazing. But people believe it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Atlanta. Henry, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Mike? I'm praying for you, my brother, and I also turn a lot of people on to your show. I wanted to kind of piggyback in on something. I wanted to say two things. One, you know, when David got in that trouble, you know, the one reason why the scripture said that the sword would never leave his house, but then David spent about a whole year back and forth going through depression as to whether or not he should talk about it. Of course, by the time Nathan got to him, you know, he had to just come on out with it anyway. But David spent a lot of that whole union. By the time Nathan got to him and he, you know, repents, basically, he has spent that whole year pretty much on his face trying to figure out what to do. You know, Psalm 51 kind of goes into some of the physical distresses that he was going through. His bones are dry. He was going through depression because he was lying, you know. So anyway, so that's one reason. But he was a man after God's own heart, so that's one reason why God didn't kill him. Even before he repented in his heart, he just didn't do it out in the open. When Nathan got to him, he was a man after God's own heart, so God said, okay, fine. Which was unusual because kings didn't confess things back then. You know, he's one of the few kings that did. What do you think about what's going on between John Kerry and what exactly are they trying to force Israel into? I'm hearing some stuff on the news.
Rabbi Shmuley, my friend, was talking about this in the last hour before this one. And basically his question was, why is John Kerry so focused on going to Israel over and over and over and over and over and over? And you've got crisis happening in Syria, terrible loss of life. You've got crisis in some of the surrounding nations. Why Israel? So basically, Henry, and thanks for turning people on to the broadcast here. Basically, Israel is being pushed to once again divide Jerusalem and to go back to 1967 borders, which at points would make Israel 9 miles wide, surrounded by many that don't want them to exist. It is national suicide.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Matt, you left out the R. Unless I'm supposed to thow away. Oh, throw away. Okay, got it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's play a couple of clips from Secretary of State John Kerry. I'm not saying that people are insincere. I'm not saying that people are not trying, but it's more of the same old, same old. And when you still have Palestinian Authority saying he will not recognize Israel, Mahmoud Abbas, he will not recognize Israel as a Jewish state. He's still saying that. And Hamas still has in its charter, wants the extermination of Israel. These are your peace partners? These are your peace partners? Clip number 8, this is John Kerry. Jake Tapper is speaking with him on CNN, and Kerry's getting a lot of criticism because he said, hey, Israel could suffer boycotts if they don't work together with us and go with our peace plan. Number 8.
What's your response to these very harsh attacks from our allies, the Israelis?
My comments need to be properly represented, not distorted. I did not do anything except cite what other people are talking about as a problem, but I also have always opposed boycotts. Unfortunately, there are some people in Israel and in Palestine and in the Arab world and around the world who don't support peace process. There are specifically some people who don't support two states. There are some people who don't want any restraint on settlements whatsoever.
All right. Well, first, what's that got to do with the comments made? Either they were good comments or not. You don't need to say that there are people among the Israelis and Palestinians who don't want peace. We understand that. What's that got to do with the boycott statement? Well, Secretary of State Kerry says, I'm against boycotts personally, but I'm just telling you what's going to happen, that if Israel doesn't agree with this peace process, that there are going to be boycotts. Well, why say that? Well, why not say we will stand against any boycotts if someone tries to raise it? Or why not say we appreciate what Israel's trying to do in the peace process? We know these are very difficult issues, and we know people have threatened boycotts. We want Israel to know we're standing with them against the boycotts. Well, how can they say that when you've got American educational institutions signing on together saying that we will be part of academic boycotts against Israel, when you have American church denominations saying that we are now divesting any investments in Israel, so the opposite of investing, divesting, and we stand for sanctions against Israel. There are boycotts taking place, being led by, initiated by American organizations or heavily supported by American educational institutions or companies or denominations. Perfect time for John Kerry to speak out against them rather than tell Israel, you know, there could be consequences. And then clip number 9, the conversation continues.
The majority of the people in Israel, the majority of the Palestinians, the majority of the people in the region believe in peace and want peace and believe peace will strengthen everybody. The United States of America, through President Obama and his direction and his policy, is absolutely committed, ironclad, to the security of Israel. And Israel needs to understand we will always stand by its security needs.
All right, I appreciate Secretary of State Kerry saying that on behalf of President Obama as well. Here's the issue. If Israel agreed to go back to 1967 borders and have a divided Jerusalem, put aside the emotional, religious, historic significance of Jerusalem to Israel and the Jewish people, but if it agreed to do that, that would mean that America would have to say, we are going to stand with you for your safety because the borders are indefensible. And that would mean simply for Israel to exist without getting obliterated and to even have any sense of peace and security for those who lived in the most open areas, the most reachable areas. And right now, Israel is surrounded by roughly 170,000 missiles. From all sides, they are surrounded by hostile enemies, be it Hamas, be it Hezbollah, be it Iran, be it others. They're surrounded by hostile enemies. And now these missiles can get to all the major cities of Israel. Israel's surrounded by this. This is a present tense reality. And Israel's not just saying, hey, we got nuclear bombs. You touch us, we're going to wipe you all out, so don't even think about it. These are daily threats. These are present threats that the people live with. And by the way, when John Kerry said that no Israelis have been killed by anyone from the West Bank in the last year, the widows and family members of those who were killed are speaking up and saying, how dare he say that? How insensitive could he be? One widow said, my husband was stabbed to death by a Palestinian from the West Bank. Do most Palestinians in the West Bank want to kill Israelis stabbed to death? I assume not. To some, yes. But Kerry was blatantly wrong. I mean, you don't make a statement like that unless you know that for sure, because you're talking about people's lives, 3, 4, 5 people, you know, 10 people, 20 people, 2 people. You don't make that statement that it's none unless you're 100% sure. But back to what I was saying. Unless America made some kind of arrangement with Israel and said, we're going to stand with you to protect you and to guarantee these borders, there's no way that Israel could go back to them. And then that means that Israel is now dependent on America for its safety on a daily basis, not just for funding or supplies or armaments or things like that, but actually saying in a tangible way, America has to keep Israel safe. America's not going to live with that. Excuse me, Israel is not going to live with that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Marianne in Sarasota, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, Doctor, I love your program. I thank you for all of your contribution, for whatever it takes from your family. And I know you've got the call, and I appreciate you and all your work so much. I have got this on my mind, and I have had for a while. I wonder if the United States of America is suffering judgment from God because of killing so many babies, homosexuality, you know, all that, and then thinking of prophecy, Israel a nation, taking prayer out of school. We've been trying to take God out of our country. I mean, I believe that our condition, and including what John Kerry's doing and our own president, all of this is hitting God in the face with our fist. Is this not true?
Well, there are serious issues to be raised here in terms of America standing with Israel. Look, let's understand that it's not saying that everything Israel does is perfect. Let's understand that we do have a history. Let's understand that Israel is the only true democracy functioning on its own in the Middle East and our best ally in the Middle East. And let's understand that there has been a historic recognition of the importance of the modern state of Israel. And from the spiritual viewpoint, I believe it's one reason God has mercy on America is because in many ways we have stood with Israel. I absolutely believe that. And I believe if we don't, there are consequences because the prophetic scriptures and God's promises are bigger. Look, on a church level, Marianne, on a simple church level, the fact of the matter is that that when Paul warns in Romans 11 and says, I don't want you to be ignorant of this mystery, that the Jewish branches have been broken off and Gentile branches grafted in, but there are still promises that remain to the nation of Israel. I said, I don't want you to be ignorant of this mystery, lest you become arrogant. That's what's happened through church history. And when the church, we're just talking about the church now, not the nation of America, not our president, but just the church. When the church has gotten messed up here, I see it happening again. I see it in front of my eyes. With people who have a wrong theology about Israel and Jewish people, they become militantly anti-Israel. Double standards are used. There's, in my view, a clear spiritual blindness, even a justice blindness, a factual blindness. an inability to see the larger issues clearly, and a lot of it stems from wrong theology. Paul warned about it explicitly. We see it happen in church history. We see it happening in front of our eyes today. We need to pray for mercy on our nation. We need to pray for mercy on the nation of Israel, because the Jewish people there need the Messiah. And we need to pray for mercy on the surrounding Muslim and Arab nations, because they are loved by God and Jesus shed his blood for them. And for me, my standing with Israel gives me a greater heart of love to stand with those who do not know him in the Middle East, including my Muslim cousins. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go right back to the phones. Brian in Snellville, Georgia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, doctor, how are you? Shalom, Ms. Boca. Hey, I have a question for you concerning blessing the Sabbath candles for Messianic congregation. I noticed that it says, blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has commanded us to light the Sabbath candles. When that's not actually in the Torah or not found anywhere in the Tanakh, but rather the oral tradition. And I'm curious why those who are quote-unquote Torah followers actually include things that are oral that God didn't say, but man said. Can you explain that for me?
It's a very important question, Brian. So let me explain this. You have traditional Jews. One of the most sacred times of the week is when the mother or the woman of the home will light the Sabbath candles, and there's a certain ritual that she'll go through. And she'll pray a prayer, and in the prayer, she says that God has commanded us to light the Sabbath candle.
Yes, sir.
Now, as you say, there is nowhere in the Torah that's mentioned. There's nowhere in the Torah that mentions a Sabbath candle. Anything like this whatsoever, it isn't there. It is one of what is called the seven rabbinic commandments. So rabbinic tradition, we can't say exactly when this began, but rabbinic tradition, going fairly back in antiquity, had this as one of the seven rabbinic commandments, saying that this is as if God commanded it.
Yeah.
There is a distinction in rabbinic tradition that's called Midoraita or Midorabbanan, from the Torah or from the rabbis.
Yeah.
And that there is a distinction made, okay, that this is actually Torah. No, this is actually rabbinic tradition. Now, sometimes rabbinic tradition can carry even more weight than Torah law itself because you can't, according to rabbinic tradition, understand the Torah law or live it out without the traditions. But in point of fact, the distinctions are made. This is something that is as if it was divinely commanded. So if you are a Messianic Jew, you're a Jewish believer in Jesus, and you say, okay, I like these traditions, or I grew up with these traditions. What I always say to Messianic Jews is you need to change the wording there. Unless you really believe that God commanded the rabbis in all these different ways, in which case it's hard for me to understand why you're a Messianic Jew and not a traditional Jew, because you're saying they're right about this and this and this, and really were divinely commanded. They just got things wrong on Jesus. So just to say this last thing, then back to you. So many Messianic Jews will then change it because they appreciate the tradition, or it has sacredness in their own family life. And they will say, as they light the candles, that you have commanded us to be a light to the world, or you've given us Yeshua, the light of the world, and commanded us to go and be a light to the world, you know, and say that blessing in Hebrew and English. That, to me, makes more sense, that if the Sabbath candles have meaning to you and connect you with our people and help to set apart this time as sacred for you and your family, then just pray a prayer that has more biblical basis to it.
Well, my wife and I, whenever we do the candles, we say, you commanded us to observe the Sabbath, and we're remembered by lighting the candle because you are the light of the world. You know, we just kind of do our own thing. But also, you know, like at the Lord's Supper, which we know is the Pesach, you know, the blessings over the cup, over the bread, you know, it's also said, blessed are you who has commanded us to do these things. Now, Jesus was more of a, I guess you would call it Kohanite, which followed the Torah more than, I guess, a Talmudin or, you know, Pharisees.
Yeah, well, yeah, Brian, just to try to clarify, if in my book, Real Kosher Jesus, I do get into a lot of this. There were traditions, there were different groups, the Pharisees, Sadducees, some other groups, and there were things that the Pharisees innovated, like the synagogues, and Yeshua went to the synagogue. So he did certain things that Pharisees did. There are other things he differed with. There was always tradition. All of us, and I'm just looking at the clock. I got to run a second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. All of us, Brian, have certain traditions. Whether you go to some church and say, we're just a Bible church, well, you do certain things that are in the Bible and certain things based on tradition. The question is, when tradition contradicts Scripture or tradition takes away from the spirit of Scripture, what do you do? And that's the bigger issue here, and that's where the disagreement would then come up about the conflicts that Matthew 15 and Mark 7 and Matthew 23 and other passages refer to. But in my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, I get into that. Also, Volume 5 of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, Brian, the whole thing is about Jewish tradition with appreciation and with difference. Hey, I've got to run, but great call and question for Thursday. Hey, friends, I want you to understand something as we're in our fourth day of seeking the face of God and asking him to bring in supernatural funding, resources to enable us to do what he's called us to do. To be on these airwaves with you, to be speaking to the nation, to be reaching out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to be helping equip the church and Jewish believers in particular to be witnesses. We have more and more material coming available in Hebrew and just so many things unfolding that are extraordinary. But we need your help. We're stretched to the limit. I want you to understand that we've had some people here and there and periodic times when we'll get some large gifts. But we are supported by people like you who pray for us, who are torchbearers, who send in $25 or $50 every month, who take advantage of special resource offers we have. You know, for those that wonder, you know, what do these preachers do with all the money? Well, I wish there was all the money because we keep pouring it right back out to you and to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And to raise up and send out more laborers, more missionaries on the mission field. I was just reading an account of one of our grads. He's been in Mexico for, I think, 13 years now as a missionary. And just going to the poorest of the poor, this little shack made of partly of cardboard. And he's discipling the people there. They can't read, but they know how to pray. This is some of what we're involved with your help. So would you first join us in prayer and go to God these days. Take some extra time and ask God, Lord, back what they're doing, back Mike, back this ministry. Help them to do what you call them to do. We've given many special resource offers in the 5.5 years we've been on Daily Talk Radio. I've never received a dime personally from any of that. That goes right back into ministry. So pray with us and then stand with us. Would you do that? Would you stand with us if you can help financially? Why not become a torchbearer? One of our monthly supporters. You can do that just by going to our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, clicking on donate. Or you can call this number, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. And those that help us with a gift of at least $50 this week, I'm signing copies of my Jeremiah commentary. It's 550 pages, beautiful hardcover, and it comes together with a commentary on Lamentations and Ezekiel. I'm talking about rich, get you in the Word, open up the Hebrew to you, open up prophetic ministry to you. Your gift of $50 or more, I want to sign that, send it to you. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, when we align ourselves with the heart of God and the purposes of God, we'll find ourselves praying for Israel.